104 DGS on a Monday. Going to get warm again this week, but, you know, we're plowing our way towards fall. Bernie Miklas joins us at the bottom of the hour. Time for Razor's Edge.
There's two things I want to talk about for Razor's Edge today. First, I want to start by talking about the U.S. Open a little bit. So it was really exciting this year. There was an American in both the men's and the women's final, which there hasn't been a man in the U.S. Open final since, I think, 2003.
Wow. What's the deal?
It's just been dominated by non-American men. The sport's been dominated by non-American men for such a long time. So Taylor Fritz made it to the final. I'll admit I was not like a huge fan of his. I wanted him to win because I want the American to win. But I was just like, he's got like an influencer lifestyle going on that it's just not necessarily my type of thing. But he lost. He lost in three sets, which is a huge bummer. Mm-hmm. And he's after the game is over, you just have to sit around and wait while the person who beat you is being celebrated and honored. And you're just sitting there. And I felt so bad for him. And I wanted to ask you guys, like, how do you think you would handle suffering the biggest defeat of your life and then having to stand up in front of everyone and give a nice speech and try your hardest to smile? It just seems so very, very difficult. And it made me gain a lot of respect for him that he was able to keep it together, because it did seem like he wanted to cry, but didn't. But that's just a lot of pressure. It's just you out there. There's no one to like, there's no teammate to hide behind or anything. It was just your performance. And then you're interviewed about it and you have to give props to this other person.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems really tough to me. I have a ton of respect for the people who are able to do it.
I was up for an award recently and they had an event for it. And I just had a spidey sense that I had won. So I was going to go. And then something came up and I couldn't. And I didn't win. And I was so glad. So glad I didn't go. But good for you. Good. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good for you. Good for you.
But I guess this is a question for Wheels, too. I mean, you've just played so many sports and you've coached so many sports. After your guys' baseball games, do they still, like, line up and everybody tells each other good game and everything?
Yeah, they do the handshake after the games. At the end, like, say you get to the championship of a tournament, they do a little on-field ceremony where they'll give the winning team a trophy and then the runner-up gets a trophy and, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, it can be annoying for the people on the losing side because you're like, oh, God, we just lost this brutal game. Your team was good. You spent probably five or six games in 2 days. Like, you're tired. You just don't want to do any of that nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
It's normal. I mean, like, what you're describing is what the losing team in every championship ends up doing. They don't necessarily do it the way that you're talking about, right? It's not just like right there on the field, but it is right after the game. You're sitting in front of hundreds of reporters after the Super Bowl answering questions about why the other team beat you. So
yeah, that's
part of the deal.
That's one thing, just especially like listening to you guys talk about sports as much as you do, and the way we speak about athletes, it's like, yeah, if he's getting to be about 35 years old, I mean, might as well send him out to pasture. It would be so hurtful. Like, I don't know, just all these things are finally like sinking in with me. The pressure these athletes are under, like, not only do they have to do these impossibly tough physical things, the mental aspect of it is just so important. And then you have like commentators being like, they had a terrible game. I would just try to avoid listening to any kind of commentary if I were a professional athlete. I think so.
I think the hard part for most people is you grow up in that. It doesn't hit them the same way that it would hit you.
Right.
Because they've lived with criticism and evaluations and people talking about their performance since they were 12, 13 years old. And
I could be wrong about this, but when you were saying that, Rach, I was thinking to myself, I'm glad I'm not more famous than I am, like on a national level where people were talking about you all the time and criticizing you, because I have a very thin skin. I don't think I would feel nearly that way if it were athletics. And I'm not sure why. Maybe because what we do is so our essence, as opposed to just, I ran as fast as I could, I threw as far as I could, and I just didn't have it today or what have you.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, by the way. I think it's different. And I think the difference is on the field of play in any sport, everything there is measurable. Your abilities are measurable. You're 6'4", you're 240 pounds, you throw 97 miles an hour. It's so much more measurable. So that makes it a little bit more objective, right, than subjective. your like or dislike for a radio show, a stand-up comic, a band, that's very subjective, and that makes it very personal. It's not measurable. It's not, you know, like, again, like, so, like, when I'll criticize Miles Michaelis today, right? He should not make another start this year. He's been terrible. It has nothing to do with him. It's not about him. He's a great guy. It's not, he's not trying to perform, but there is a result that sits there, and that result is either great or okay or not good enough as an athlete. I think that's why athletes, that's what I love about sports. And that's where I had kind of the, that's why I say it's different, because it's the world I grew up in sports being told about all the things I'm not good enough at. Right? Like, but it wasn't done in a mean way. It was always, if you want what you want, this is what you need to be better at. Right? So I had coaches when I was in high school. You're not going, as you are now, you're not going to be a Division I baseball player. So you learn that criticism is not bad because you're constantly getting that feedback. So it doesn't mean that they don't have feelings. Some of them are different. Some of them are going to feel different about when they're criticized. I mean, some of them take it very personally when you just say they had a bad game. I mean, I don't know why you would. It's measurable. You either have a good game or a bad game, and we can see that. But there are guys that are like that, and women too. There are athletes that are like that. Most of them are not, because you spend your whole life being evaluated like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they know. Like, who knows better than you when you stink?
That's true.
I know when I stink. I know when it's not hard to tell. Mm-hmm. I think Miles would be like, yeah, 7 runs in 2 innings is not very good. I think I can take the criticism today.
I just really felt for Taylor Fritz watching him yesterday, just sitting there like knowing how crushed. I mean, actually, I don't know how crushed you must have felt, because I've never reached anything close to that. But there's all this pressure of like, oh, we want an American to win. It's the U.S. Open. This is our chance. And then it's like, you didn't. And now you have to try not to cry. it's just tough. As an average Joe watching that, I felt for him a lot. Yeah.
That's another thing, though. Like, the other thing you grew up with is you lose all the time mm-hmm. playing sports. Like, you lose all the time, even when you're at that level. So it's not as different as it is to people that haven't done that, where you're not used to, like, big losses in front of people, whatever. Your losses might be more private, or they might be more quiet, or they're not as noticeable. But, as, you know, at that level, he's probably lost hundreds of times in
sort
that
of like
setting.
The Teddy Roosevelt quote about the man who gets in the ring. And how the man who gets in the ring and fights and bloodies, that he deserves the credit and respect, not the people outside the ring who are criticizing him XYZ. If you get in the ring enough, you're likely to win and you're likely to lose.
Yeah, yeah.
And, for example, with my career, I won a lot, especially early on, and then you don't. And then they're fewer and farther between. Then you lose a couple you really thought you know what I'm saying? It's like the longer you do something at a high enough level, you better get used to losing.
Yeah.
Because nobody just wins all the time.
Yeah. Mm. I honest to God believe part of the reason why things don't faze me is because I've always had that. I mean, it's just always been a part of my daily life. You're going to lose today, or you're going to win today, but you're going to lose almost as often as you're going to win. And that's for the normies, right? That's not, I mean, if you're Shohei Ohtani, you probably don't have a whole lot of quote personal losses, right? You've always had success. You've always had, you'll strike out, you'll lose games, but like what you're doing for yourself, you're having this broad success. But that's not the norm. But even with that, he has failed.
But even a Shohei Ohtani, unless he pulls a Barry Sanders and retires in 3 years at his peak, he will decline.
Eventually,
like,
yeah.
Like,
that's exactly right.
Like Goldie and Arenado.
Everybody will.
Everyone declines.
Yes.
No one retires at 57 from baseball.
No. It would be great if some guy did, though.
The other thing I wanted to talk about is very apropos of what we were talking about in the first hour. Dave was talking about the fact that he feels like he's too focused on feeling a certain way. And there was a study done at the University of California, Berkeley, New York University, and the University of Toronto. They rounded up 1,800 study subjects and had them answer questions about their beliefs around happiness, and they kept diaries of their moods. So they noticed something very interesting. The more these study subjects checked in on their own happiness levels, the less happy they reported being. The researchers hypothesize that being overly focused on happiness leads people to believe they should aim to feel positive emotions all the time. And that results in you feeling less happy because you feel like you're failing. You feel like, oh, I should feel this certain way. And since I don't, I'm failing. And now I'm more unhappy than ever. So,
you know what I think is the saddest? Because I think it comes naturally with age. Maybe I'm just extrapolating my personal experience. Like I said in the first hour, like I remember being young and in my 20s, and I got in my car. I drove to my girlfriend's house. We watched Cheers with her parents. I kissed her. I came home. I ate popcorn. I went to bed. I don't remember thinking about my life. I really don't. I was just in it and doing it. And the older I get, the less I'm in it doing it, the more I'm observing it and thinking about it. But from what I can tell from like Gen Alpha and Gen Z, I've heard many parents say this, that their kids have embraced trauma as a badge. And everyone's in therapy and everyone's on SSRIs and everyone has trauma. And maybe they do. And I spend a lot of my time talking about mental health and how you should be careful of yours. But it makes me so sad that the youth that I had, which was pretty oblivious, great living, that they would have what I have at 60 at 20. That's sad to me.
The hope that I have is that it turns the other way when they're 60.
It would be hard to progress negatively that long.
Mm-hmm. What's what I mean? I don't know. I'm just that would be my hope. My hope would be that you're going through whatever you're going through now, and then as you get older, it doesn't. I'm not saying it flips, but you're going through therapy. You're going through things that should help you, and at some point, you would hope that that would turn the other direction. But it doesn't mean it will. But I mean, every generation is different, and every person is different when it comes to how that path follows.
I would say therapy has been a mixed bag for me. I think it is very helpful, especially the difference between no therapy and therapy is a big difference. But if you do it too much, sometimes that can become like its own kind of ruminating, you know, like I'm going to go in on Wednesday mornings and talk to my therapist for an hour about the things that are bothering me. Maybe some days I'd be better off going to Forest Park and just going for a walk.
Yeah, I relate to that because I've been to therapy, too. And there have been times where it's like, wow, this is so helpful. Like I'm making breakthroughs. I'm seeing things that I need to see. And, you know, it's putting me in a great mindset. But then once you kind of conquer those things and it's like, well, what else can we, let's go shopping here. Let's something to be upset about. Yeah. Then it's better to just like not focus on yourself that much. So researchers noted that Americans obsess with adding happiness to their trophy list of achievements, leading to more anxiety. They suggest that you pursue other goals other than happiness, like community, meaning, service, and that happiness is the byproduct of a life well lived, not its end goal. So something
that's a good way to put it. That's exactly how I look at things. That happiness is not a target because it's not, it's an idea, it's not a goal.
There is no happily ever after.
Right. I mean, there's a thing that I want to do. I want to have a good show today, and that's my goal for today. Or tomorrow it's going to be, I want the Lions to win. Or what I mean like it, what I'm thinking of is always individual task's not the right word, event maybe oriented. And then that each one of those things is a win or a loss, or it's fun or it's not, you know, it's a good experience or it's a bad experience, but it's not some, it's all reachable. It's all tangible. It's all something that I can do.
That's one of my downfalls, is I'm the opposite. I don't look at the component parts of my life. I look at the overall. And if I were to die right now, what would people say at my funeral kind of thing? And that's just no way to live.
Makes
my
it hard.
Therapist tells me all the time.
Yeah, it makes it hard.
Yeah.
But I mean, like with everything else, you're not trying to do it.
True.
Right? I mean, it's...
And sometimes trying not to do it is the worst thing you can do.
It adds to the... Well, it's just adding another... It's another level of focus on the thing.
It's like... I liken it to falling asleep. Like, you can't concentrate on falling asleep because then you'll never fall asleep. It's something you just have to let it happen. But that can be really, really difficult if it's something that you've become fixated on, so...
Yeah. Given my level of mental struggles... I really, really feel for people who have serious mental struggles.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't label mine serious. Mine are difficult.
Yeah.
But you see people who they're serious and you're just like, God love you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's tough for you and your family. 225 DGS, Bernie Miklas at the bottom of the hour. Talking a lot about the soft sciences today. We'll do one more little segment here because I was just thinking to myself, Rach and I were talking about, so I don't have social media. So I don't see Twitter. I don't see people being mean. I don't have Instagram. I'm not comparing my life with other people's, you know, trips to Spain and things like that. But I have TikTok, and it's my number one time waster. Just scroll, scroll, scroll. And even that I've noticed, for example, I love fall. I love autumn. And TikTok has discovered that about me. So it's feeding me a lot of highly produced, I'm making pumpkin popovers and in this beautiful house that I'll never own on a country lane in Vermont, even my fall isn't good enough.
Yeah.
You know?
I definitely relate to that.
But they're all faking it.
Yeah. I mean, probably literally.
Yeah.
It's probably AI.
I will say I had no idea there were so many rich people until I got TikTok, though.
Yeah, they're not.
Because you see these people's homes and you're like, what? This is insane. Like, I've never even been in a house like this. And this is just, people just act like it's totally normal. But I mean, I guess if I had a house like that, too, I would want to film it and show it off. I don't know.
Boy, I wouldn't. That's the last thing I'd want to do.
What's that?
If I had a house like that. Show it off and... Oh. Spike the ball. And
there are definitely people that like spiking.
Spiking with their pumpkin popovers or whatever.
Yeah, take it easy. Just no need to brag.
I mean, people are very braggy.
That is the point of social media. Like, it has changed society to where it used to be, you know, socially acceptable to be humble and to hide those things away and not brag. And now it's just like, you better be bragging or else what else are you doing?
We are all watching each other's highlight reel while we live our own blooper reel. Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. If you haven't heard the news, Bernie Miklas has joined the KMOX staff, returning to KMOX after all these years. He'll be with us Mondays and Fridays, then doing some various shows. He's on with Chris and Amy Tuesdays and Thursdays. So tune in for that, and keep checking us out at KMOX.com for more Bernie content. Bernie, how's your weekend, buddy?
Doing good, man. Just watch a lot of football. That's what I like to do over the weekend. I'm not too ambitious. Hey, just before we get go along here, I'm going to be on tonight on Sports Open Line.
Nice.
So, it's 6:20 with our friend Matt Pauly. Just wanted to throw that in there.
Nice. You must be looking forward to that. That'll be fun.
Sure. Absolutely, man. It's now I really feel like that I'm returning home. All those nights I did Sports Open Line.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Soft question for you guys. I let personalities get in my way of enjoying the game sometimes. Like, I can't stand Travis Kelce or Tom Brady. And it's 100% because they're big, rich, and handsome, and I'm just full of resentment. But I just can't stand them. Do you guys, have you, over your career, Bernie, like, whether it was someone that you weren't close with or maybe someone who you covered, just like, this guy just gets on my nerves?
Well, actually, the top guy on my list is actually playing tonight, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, just, I'm over it with him, you know?
Yeah.
Just, he needs a run for politics or something. Then he can just see if people want to vote on all his absurd theories. You know, I don't know, whatever. You know, it's just like, I think he's going from one of the greats ever. I think the people that are like picked, it's all, you know, hey, don't count out the Jets. And they still think that Aaron Rodgers is like 31 or something. I mean, it's just kind of strange.
I have one more complaint. I'm not a prude. I like fun. But I'm so over the NFL dancing and celebrating every time they stop a 5-yard pass.
Dave.
I know. It's just like, don't do it. Don't do it. Like when
Dave.
When I was a kid.
Dave's telling us to get off the lawn.
See, Dave, what happens to you when you turn 60?
I know. I know. Wait, I'm about to get worse. When I was a kid, I was a running back. You got tackled. You handed the ball to the ref. When you made a foul in basketball, you held up your hands. There's no dancing.
Listen, I'll meet you halfway on this. I actually like the end zone celebrations. I think they're funny, actually. I have no problem with that. Let people celebrate a true accomplishment.
Yeah.
Putting something on the scoreboard for your team or making a defensive play that changes a game. I'm totally with you, though. It is annoying, I admit. Like, to use your example, all right, a defensive back actually doesn't do a good job of covering a receiver. The receiver catches a short pass, but then turns upfield, gets another 7 or 8 yards, and then the same defensive back tackles him, and then he's standing over and uh-huh. talking trash like uh-huh. he just did something. No, dude, you didn't do your job. What are you woofing about? No, yeah. I get you with that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. My version of that is when, like, a team is down 28 points and a receiver catches makes a great catch for 30 yards and he's celebrating. Like, dude, you're losing by 28 points.
I totally agree.
Like,
totally
game agree. Situation dictates a lot of what I'm cool with. I'm cool with anything that's in a highly competitive environment and you're jacked up and you're competing and that just what comes out. All right. But, like, come on, man. You don't need to be spiking the ball when you're down 4 touchdowns.
I didn't seek it out. I was flipping around during college football, and I just happened to land on the last few minutes of Notre Dame, Northern Illinois.
Oh.
Wow. Is that the biggest upset we've had in years?
It really is.
It's up there.
You know, the fact that Notre Dame was the number 5 team in the country, this one is the first one in many, many, many years that would resonate as loudly as it did. And because I also think it's because it's Notre Dame. And Notre Dame beat Texas A&M, and everyone's talking about, hey, Notre Dame's back. They're going to be a lock for the playoffs. Look at their schedule. You know, they'll be the favorite in every game. Boy, they're in great shape. And now it's like, wow, you talk about it. A skid, and you talk about how the narrative has changed.
Yeah.
Now you read The Athletic and some other places. It's like, well, this is kind of what Marcus Freeman does. So let's see if he's fighting for his job now. I mean, that thing changed like in 5 minutes, the whole narrative about Notre Dame in 2024.
So we just believe in and celebrate Mizzou at number 6?
Well, you know, I love the fact that the SEC's got 6 of the top 7. I think it's all going to shake out. I think, you know, and I've mentioned this before, you know, Saturday Boston College comes into Columbia, and Boston College is pretty good. And Boston College is actually ranked this week. So I think Mizzou's actually going to get a test, and I'll be more prepared to assess whether their rating is legit, whether they're overrated, whether maybe they're even a little underrated. I think their first legitimate game is going to tell us a lot, but I really like what we've seen so far. And I think the defense, and I know they didn't play anybody the first 2 games, but their defense looks awfully good. And there were a lot of concerns about that. But once again, we'll know more after Boston College visits.
Yeah, I think you'll probably agree with this, Bernie. And obviously, there's a chance you don't, but I think you will. But these preseason polls are about one thing, and they're about creating television excitement. If you didn't have a number next to teams, it wouldn't be like number 4 against number 10 or whatever, which generates some excitement. Later in the year, those matchups are more meaningful based on rankings because they've done something. They have a body of work. And like we saw with Michigan and Texas this past weekend, Michigan had no business being ranked where they were.
Right.
But they were there because they were good last year. And because by having that name with a number 5 next to it, it creates this excitement for television matchups. I think that's what worries me about so much of the rankings. These rankings don't mean anything. They have nothing to do with the playoffs. Those playoff rankings will come out later when there's more a body of work to assess. But this right now is all about just generating excitement. So
I never thought
of
that.
Yeah, and I'm not. And that's not a knock on Mizzou, by the way. I think Mizzou's good, but I don't think we know that yet.
Well, here's the kind of thing that drives me crazy. I'll give you an example of the ratings. Okay. Do I think, and maybe I'm wrong, because if you asked me and said, look, do you really think Northern Illinois is better than Notre Dame? I mean, over the course of the season, probably not.
No, right.
But how, wait a minute, Northern Illinois went into South Bend and won a game against the number 5 team in the country, and Notre Dame is still ranked, and Northern Illinois is not. How can Northern Illinois, like, not be ranked, or how can Notre Dame still be ranked? That result actually happened. It matters. You know, so that's the stuff that drives me nuts.
Yeah, I'm with you. You can't, because none of this stuff with the rankings can be logical. It is inherently illogical because it's a combination. You're trying to reconcile what people think of a team and what they've actually done.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Those two things don't always go together. So you get an irrational thing where a team is 2-0 and they beat another team, But yet that team's not ranked, and the other team that lost is ranked because people think they're better than the other team.
Yeah. Right. There's a built-in bias in the system. There's no doubt about it.
But switch to the Cardinals since we only have a few minutes left. Wheels, hyperbole, or did you mean it in the last segment where you said that Mikolas shouldn't start again?
He shouldn't make another start this year. He's got the second worst earned run average, and I know that's not a great measure, but the other measures back this up. If you go look at some of his batted ball numbers against and all of that, he has the second worst ERA in baseball this year. He has the second worst ERA in baseball since the start of last year. And if you take the more advanced ones, expected fielding independence, right? So this is fielding independent, meaning you're not talking about whether you get help or get hurt from your team's defense, and also kind of taking out some of the luck factor in there. It's still one of the three or four worst in baseball during that same span.
Well, he's not getting any younger. And the biggest concern with him is that this year he's got the worst strikeout rate any pitcher in the major league, starting pitcher, and he's also got the lowest swing and miss rate.
Right.
So he doesn't miss bats. He's extremely vulnerable, and he's only going to get more vulnerable with age. He's 36 already. And the other thing about him is that, like, when he throws a pitch and they swing and they connect, he's given up the highest contact rate on strikes in Major League Baseball. So he's basically, a lot of times, he's basically at the level of a batting practice pitcher, and I'm not even trying to be glib there. But I'll go one more. I said this on my YouTube channel earlier today. They need to just dump him. I know it sounds harsh, but they've done it before. And people say, well, what do you mean dump him? Well, they owe him, you know, nearly $17 million next year. But we've seen the Cardinals in the past where they've actually said, you know, it's just best to move on. They basically traded Dexter Fowler to the Angels for nothing.
Right.
Because they paid like about $13 million of his salary. And they did something similar to get rid of Mike Leake. And they did something similar to get rid of Tino Martinez. So the Cardinals have done this in the past. But what would be the point if we all agree you need to have better starting pitching in 2025, and we all agree with that?
Yeah.
You can't have that with Miles Michaelis in your rotation. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just the reality, and that's my opinion.
Yeah, I think, as always, I saw the video, and you backed it up, and I think that's what I try to do, is back up the point that when you're in the bottom three or four over a two-year span among starting pitchers in baseball in a handful of important categories, that tells you you're at, and I'm sorry, this is not personal. I know it's going to sound personal. That makes the team worse having him on the team.
It does.
So why would
there's no doubt about it.
To make you worse when you could pay him to not hurt you? I know that sounds terrible, but that's what the numbers tell you.
It's like the double or triple whammy. In other words, like, it's bad enough that he's in the rotation and he's costing you games. And again, it's just a liability. But the second part of the double whammy is that you could use his spot to actually upgrade the positions. So you're losing on two fronts that way. I mean, now some people will say, well, you know, his record when he starts isn't bad. Well, I would tell them, number one, it's like, come on now, don't try to sell that. You ain't going to get that past me. So go look at run support. Like, when they win games that he starts, their run support is usually really, really good, and he benefits from it.
Yeah, I think, again, not trying to be mean or pile on, the numbers that you've gotten from him from the last 2 years could easily be replaced by any one of your young pitchers in the minor leagues. Any one of them, McGreevy, Graceffo, those guys could come up. They would get sent down if they put up these numbers.
Literally, the only
thing keeping Michaelis in the rotation is his contract and his age.
Did we make a mistake, or did something unforeseen happen with Michaelis?
You know, in 2022, he had a really good year, and he looked really fine. And then the Cardinals gave him a contract extension. They might have done that like in the spring of 22.
They did it too early, yeah.
And they gave him a two-year contract extension. Now, listen, I don't want to be a hypocrite. When they did it, I thought, hey, this is fine. You know, he'll give you innings. He'll work out. He's probably going to slip a little. But I was wrong about that. So, again, I just want to point the finger and say that, you know, I didn't exactly say, oh, this is a big mistake at the time. But in retrospect, it did turn out to be a mistake.
Yep. And if they had waited, they had another year. If they had waited a year, it would have come after last year. And I think the decision might have been different if they had waited until after last year and a 4.78 ERA and all of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least the money would have been different. You might have still chosen to keep him around, but you wouldn't have committed $18.5 million to him.
And Dave and Wheels, like one of the things I looked at today, you know, going to one of the payroll tracking sites, there's only four teams in Major League Baseball this season that have spent more money on starting pitching than the Cardinals, wow. including a bunch of teams that will be going to the playoffs. Now, I'm sorry. Are they getting their money's worth? I would say no, probably not, right?
Hmm. Wow, that's really something. Bernie, where else can people find you out there online?
I'm growing the YouTube channel, and it's going really well, but thank you for letting me promote that. They can go to youtube.com/@TheBernieShow. And that's best way to do it. And scoopsnetwork.com. I write a lot of columns there too.
Very good. Great discussion. Thank you, Bernie. We'll talk to you Friday.
Take care.
253 DGS. We have Lucas Kuntz coming in studio at 4 p.m. Looking forward to meeting him. So, Andrew, you don't think you do well being alone?
I don't. You know, I like to think of myself as like a brooding lone wolf.
Sexy.
Batman on
a one-man wolf pack.
Batman on the rooftops of Gotham in the rain, you know, perched and you know, reflecting upon life and solitude. But the truth of it is, my wife did something without me on Saturday night. She went out with some coworkers. They did like a painting and wine thing. You know what I'm talking about.
Sure. Girl stuff.
Girl stuff. And then they went out to a bar, and they went out to have Mexican food. You know, girl stuff.
Yeah, fun.
And I was by myself at home, and I thought, I was like, oh, this is going to be so fun. I'm going to have the whole house to myself all night. This is going to be great. And like 40 minutes in, I'm like, I am so alone. I was like texting people, asking if they wanted to talk on the phone. I was like, look. And they're all like, oh, we're going to a party. I was like, yeah, you're going to a party now? You need someone to talk to on the drive to the party.
How did you not just get into video game mode?
I did get into video game mode, but it was like, I don't know. I couldn't stop thinking about how lonely I was.
Well, didn't you get something nice to eat? That should always help. I mean, that's what I look forward to.
I did, but I mean, I'm me, so I got it the second that she left at like 5 p.m. And I ordered it at 5 p.m., went out and picked it up, and about 4 minutes after I got home, it was completely gone.
He's like,
the styrofoam and everything. By like 6 p.m., she didn't get home until 1:30 in the morning. By like 6 p.m., I was like, well, I'm out of things to do.
At 11 p.m., you show up at the Mexican restaurant, you're like, well, hey!
Oh, I didn't know you were
going to
be here.
Oh, my gosh. This is the restaurant you were going to?
This was the one.
No, I'll literally, just go sit over here. Like, no.
I was like gaslighting her when she was like, I think I'm going to go out with them after we have dinner. And I was like, well, you know, just remember, you were really tired earlier.
Tomorrow's Sunday.
So, right, tomorrow's
big day.
Sunday.
Lot to do on Sunday.
And, you know, we there's church, you know. There's so much to think about in terms of, you should probably just cut everything short and come home right now.
Did you tell her this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She was like, no, I'm going to go out.